Blog Talk Radio.
Buddy. Hello, everybody. I'm Al Doshna, sitting in for Richard Rossi on today's program. Richard is on a special assignment that I'll tell you about in just a few moments. I've been privileged to be a guest on Richard's program several times, once about the documentary Haunted World of Ed Wood, on which I was a producer, and later about the late Richard Anderson's book, At Last, a Memoir, which I was a co-author of. With that, I would like to introduce our special guest, which ties in with that special assignment that Richard is on. That is, your special guest is Mr. Richard Rossi himself. So for the first time, he'll be discussing on his own his upcoming, much-anticipated film, Canaan Land, in which he both stars and is the director. And we just need to do a quick station ID, and we'll be back with Mr. Richard Rossi.
Hi, it's Richard. I'm here, and we had a little technical difficulties getting in, and I think our station ID got lost. Hi, Al, I'm here.
Yes. Hi, Richard. So Dustin Hoffman was in a movie years ago called Who is Harry Kellerman? Why is he saying those terrible things about me? So this show, I think, might be appropriately titled, you know, Who is Richard Rossi, and why does he want you to go see Canaan Land? So you're known to your listening audience as an actor, a filmmaker, and musician, but would you like to fill in at least some of the gaps that might be there?
I had a great acting teacher, the late Milton Casales at Beverly Hills Playhouse, and he said that all the arts come from the same seed, you know, which is the creator, and we're created in the image of God. So all these different things I do, I've been a professional musician, actor, director. It's, you know, anytime we try something creative, it helps us in the other areas. I'm trying something I'm a complete beginner at lately, and I've been taking dance, jazz dance, and modern dance and stuff like that. And I'm a beginner dancing with all these, you know, 20-year-olds, they're great dancers, and I'm old enough to be their dad. But anytime we explore any creative side of ourselves, you know, I think it blesses the other side. I've written a novel and a couple other books, made films, acted, music. I like to do visual art. So I think it shows the image of God, the creator, when we create.
All right. Yes, I was going to say that there's a spiritual aspect, of course, that is probably the driving force for you, right? So tell us about Canaan Land and how it came into being.
Well, Canaan Land is a modern-day story of an Elmer Gantry-ish preacher played by me that falls in love with a female faith healer played by Rebecca Holden, star of the mega TV hit Knight Rider. And I played Elmer Gantry on stage a couple times, based in, that was the old Sinclair Lewis book, 1927 novel that was a Pulitzer Prize winner and very controversial at the time. And that performance on stage of Elmer Gantry led to offers for me to do a remake of Elmer Gantry, and it was in the Variety and Hollywood Reporter with a known director. We were going to do that. And I backed out. I felt a little green, like I wasn't ready to do it. And plus, I have a bit of an aversion to remaking classic epic films. And the 1960 film was just so great with Elmer Gantry, played by Burt Lancaster. And Shirley Jones won an Oscar for it, and she's a wonderful person. And I visited with her and her late husband in her home, and she gave me some of the artifacts and memorabilia from Elmer Gantry, and Gene wow. Simmons played the female evangelist. So I felt like I just didn't want to touch that classic, and I went back to the source material, which was Sinclair Lewis writing in the 20s was inspired by some of the big evangelists of that time, which were Amy Simple McPherson and Billy Sunday. And so I ended up doing two films about Amy Simple McPherson instead of remaking Gantry. And Canaan Land is a passion project of mine since 20 years ago when I first played Elmer Gantry on stage, because it's kind of my take on that archetype of the Elmer Gantry-ish character. So it's not a remake of Elmer Gantry, but it's my take on the archetype of the evangelist and the con man that's been in many other films, you know, Music Man and many other ones have had that con man type. So it's kind of my take on an Elmer Gantry-ish character in the 20th century with a very kind of modern twist on it, where the ministry is streaming on YouTube and in the Me Too era, how his womanizing and conning eventually catch up with him.
Mm-hmm. But there's also the redemption factor as well.
Yeah, there really is, you know, and it's always like a little awkward how much of the third act or how many spoilers do you give out, but I do show a redemption where he goes from bad faith to good faith and where he repents of just using religion as a show, and he comes to really experience it. So it explores what is true repentance, what is true salvation.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your co-star, a lovely Rebecca Holden, who's also a producer, and as you mentioned, is best known for her role in the Knight Rider TV series. And how did she become involved with the project?
Well, the role of Sister Sarah Sunday is the lead role, and it's a very important role, obviously, to have that woman that you can believe is the evangelist, and has to be a combination of beauty and spirituality. There were thousands that wanted this part, both known and unknown. We had auditioned many, many people. And we had a lot of ups and downs in that casting process. There were some that were well-known and wanted the role, but things just didn't quite, just weren't quite right on one level or another. And I saw... being in the Christian circles out here, that Rebecca was singing at some of the local churches in their services. And so that piqued my interest, and I liked her look. And also I liked the fact that her and I are contemporaries, because there were some ingenue types that auditioned for the role, you know, that were, you know, fresh out of acting school or whatever, and that would have could have worked, but it would have changed the whole dynamic, and Brother Billy would have been like the older predator, so to speak, of this young, innocent, ingenue minister. But Rebecca has an intelligence and an experience, and being that we are of the same generation, a strength that's there that kind of informed the whole part and made her a stronger woman than if we would have went with just a, you know, an ingenue with little experience. So she auditioned for the role at one of our DP's homes, and which was a thrill for him because he had a crush on her in the Knight Rider days, and he couldn't believe it, you know. And there was Rebecca and then another well-known actress who I won't mention the other one, but another well-known actress auditioned before Rebecca, not that long before Rebecca, who was another actress that my DP had a crush on. So he said, "Oh, my God, casting Canaan Land, Richard, you brought my two crushes of my, you know, into my place here, you know." But Rebecca is very intelligent, obviously very beautiful, very a great singer. One of the best singers in the world, and she has duetted with all the great male singers, you know, from Andy Gibb to Engelbert Humperdinck, and has records that have, you know, get millions of hits on YouTube, and so she added a musical element, which I loved, And she's very intelligent, and she is a sincere woman of faith. Now, I'm not a person like some Christian filmmakers feel. If you are casting a part like this, it has to be a Christian person. I believe it has to be the best actor for the part, and I've cast roles like this where the person wasn't from a Christian background at all, but they did a great job. So, but it was a bonus, though, that she has a deep faith. She understands the world of televangelism. She's seen the toxic nature of the world of televangelism up front because she's been in those circles. So she was absolutely the best choice for the role.
Yes. So obviously this has been a passion project for you and literally an act of faith. In fact, you are a fan of low-budget guerrilla-style filmmaking or filmmakers, such as Ed Wood and T.V. Michaels. And Ed Wood in particular is a favorite of yours. And there's a spiritual aspect to Ed and his life story that's often overlooked by his being characterized as some eccentric Hollywood oddball. But his best known and most loved film, Plan 9 from Outer Space, was financed by a Hollywood Baptist church, not some big studio like Universal or MGM, but also he was able to multiply his talents against all the odds. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, Al, I absolutely love the film that you were a producer on about Ed Wood's life. It's one of my favorites, and I loved your commentary
Thank
on
you.
The film. And I've been to the church there, the Baptist Church on Cynthia Street in Beverly Hills. And it's still going. The church congregation's still there. And, you know, Ed actually had a conversion at that church, Ed Wood, and was baptized there. And you've probably seen the Christmas cards he sent out with a Jesus wig and a beard, and Ed Wood was playing Jesus in the Christmas cards. And I love some of the things you've written about it. You wrote an article that I loved a while back about, you know, the grace in his life. I identify with him. My wife kind of has chastised me, like, why do you watch all these bad B-movies, and your stuff's better than Ed Wood and all these bad B-movies. But I like seeing these kind of low-budget movies because – you know, I identify with these guys that get her done, you know, against all odds. And I mean, Ed made like 7 features in his life, you know, often where he didn't even have the money for a phone or a car. And I identify with the kind of idiosyncratic nature that he made films that were very personal, you know, like Glenn or Glenda. He struggled with transvestism. He puts it all out there in the 50s, you know, at a time where people were just like, what in the world are we watching? And Canaan Land is such a personal film to me because I've spent many years in my young adult years as minister and evangelist, and I want to make this to show, I have a passion to make this because I want to show people what that experience is like. I want to make sense of that experience. I want to help them experience the difference between bad faith and good faith, between what is false and what is true. I like the archetype characters that of the brother Billy, the con man preacher that I play, versus the true believer that Rebecca Holden plays. I think it's a very, very needed exploration of religion, and I think it's going to be a religious film that you know, secular people will like.
Right. Yeah. So as you mentioned, you would like to connect with actually two distinctly different groups of people that whom you would like to see your film. And the first of those are, you know, whom we might call like the secularists or atheists or whoever. But so the question is, why should they want to see Canaan Land, where they might want to see, you know, a superhero movie or a rom-com or an action movie or whatever? And, you know, they don't want to pay pay money to see, you know, to be preached to. And how do you address something like that?
Well, I think my films about faith and religion's been a theme in all three of my features. My last film, Baseball Last Hero, as well as Sister Amy, my first feature, and as well as Canaan Land. But I found that secular audiences really like my films because they I almost hesitate to say it. I don't want to sound like I'm insulting other Christian filmmakers, but the Christian films from the evangelical world tend to be, well, people in the world will tell me things like cheesy, not real, and just kind of these nice, Christians in the suburbs that are so, it just doesn't have the nuances of real characters in real life. And as an example of that, when I made Sister Amy and it screened at SAG, and SAG booked out, the seats were filled within 24 hours, and we did a Q&A there, and it was so many people in the industry packed the James Cagney Hall there and said they loved Sister Amy, my first guerrilla film that I made, and they said that it was one of the first Christian films that was honest, because people in her church had offered me millions of dollars if I would re-edit it and rewrite it to cut out all her human foibles. She had had a breakdown, a drug overdose, three marriages, a morals trial, accused of an affair. But I showed that this was a woman that did a lot of good, that had a passion of faith to evangelize. But I did not shrink back from the fact that she had her troubles. And then at the end of that film, she goes into the arms of Christ after she died of an overdose. And people were weeping and came up to me and said, I've never seen a Christian film this honest. Well, some of the ministers in her church, because she was the first woman to start her own denomination, they said to me, you must cut out of the film, all these things about her having problems and the drug overdose and the breakdown and things like that, because we preach a message that when you get saved and become a Christian, you're born again and old things are passed away and all things have become new. And if you show that she was troubled like this, you undercut the power of the gospel message to change people. And I said, well, yeah, and then you're preaching a lie, because you can pray the sinner's prayer and invite Christ in your heart and become a Christian. That does not eradicate all human struggle, And so Canaan Land, because it's honest about some of the fraudulent stuff in the church world, I completely disagree with those people that think Christian films should just be made for the choir, because most of them just preach to the choir and they're afraid to really show real life,
Somebody once said that the Bible is hard on its heroes, but there's a purpose for it. And a similar film is The Apostle with Robert Duvall.
Yes.
Showing,
I love that film.
Both sides.
And Brando, who doesn't really very often speak about acting awards. In fact, he didn't even show up to get his Oscar for Godfather. But he was so taken with Robert Duvall's performance in that film that he wrote him a note and said, you should win the Oscar.
Wow.
And I thought Robert Duvall gave a great performance. And similar to what we're talking about, Robert Duvall did show, this was a problematic guy. I mean, he had the marriage problems. He was womanizer. He hit the guy that was cheating with his wife. But it was a great film. I mean, there are fundamentalists that think you shouldn't show a Christian having any kind of problems. But you mentioned the Bible stories. Obviously, the Bible stories, these were often troubled people like David,
Right. Exactly. Now, talking about the more, on the other side of the coin of the Christian point of view, you have strict Christian fundamentalists who might, object to a minister being shown in a negative light. It's been widely claimed that we live in a post-Christian society. So, they would say, why would you want to put another nail, in the coffin, so to speak? How would you react to that?
That was a criticism that the Elmer Gantry film in 1960 got. In fact, that criticism was so strong of the original film, Elmer Gantry, and we're not remaking Elmer Gantry, but Brother Billy Canaan is certainly Elmer Gantry-ish. And they had rolled the credits at the beginning of the film, and the disclaimer said, we believe certain aspects of revivalism bear examination, that the conduct of some revivalists make a mockery of the traditional beliefs and practices of organized Christianity. We believe everyone has a right to worship according to his own conscience, conscience, but freedom of religion isn't license to abuse the faith of the people. However, due to the highly controversial nature of the film, we strongly urge you to prevent impressionable children from seeing it. And then the opening credits run, followed by a close-up of the first page of the novel, Elmer Gantry. I thought about, wow, way back then, that's, 60 years ago now, nearly 60 years ago that film came out. But we're facing the same question you're asking. And this just, you know, plays into Hollywood mocking Christianity. But, yeah, they're right. I mean, I am mocking the frauds. You know, when I see guys like Benny Hinn on, you know, make statements like, if you send a $1,000 offering, you know, or in the L.A. Times quoted him at one of his revivals, you know, if you want to get healed, you know, make that offering. Those kind of things are so obviously exploitive. And there's Christians that will say, you know, touch not God's anointed, don't criticize this in the church. But, you know, Jesus overturned the temple. So when we say, what would Jesus do? Jesus certainly confronted those that were ripping people off in the name of religion and making a mockery of it. I mean, I had someone come to me at one of our Eternal Grace gatherings, a ministry we have in Hollywood, and told me about this guy he knew that faked this fake gold dust stunt with the gold dust and the feathers. And I couldn't believe it because thousands of people flocked to the church where they did this. And, oh, my God, I couldn't believe how many people fell for it and still feel, you know, and still fall for it, you know. And there's so much damage done by this. I mean, it's so, so damaging, the fake stuff, you know. And, and they try to justify it. Well, you know, maybe this fake miracle will build their faith for a real miracle, you know. But I think it's you know, even the epistles, Paul rebukes those that misrepresent. I mean, it's a tough one because in some scriptures in Philippians talk about, well, as long as they're preaching Christ, even if they do it from the wrong motives, the gospel's getting out. But I feel like Jesus, like we're cleansing the temple with this film and really confronting those that are misrepresenting God, you know?
Right. In fact, there's a verse that, you know, Satan's ministers appear as a, you know, angel of light. What, probably mess it up. But that, you know, well, who are these people? If they appear as messengers, you know, of light, then we need to identify them in spite of their, you know, apparent spirituality. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, fundamentalism is such a spiritual cancer. It hurt me. It hurt my wife. It's hurt many of my friends. And I find healthy faith is so helpful and brings so much comfort, but harmful faith, you know, we have seen so many that have to recover that have been, you know, victims of it, you know.
Right. On a little bit of a lighter note, you're also a musician and composer, and you actually composed and sang some songs in the film, and can you share one of those with us?
Yeah, you know what? I may have, it might not be the best audio quality here, but I'll give you a brief cut of one of them, and then I see they do say that they fixed a technical problem to go into a show identification, so we can take a, let you guys, listeners, hear a little bit of a Canaan Land song from the upcoming film, and this is me and Rebecca Holden and some great musicians, my son Josh and his band on the guitars and drums, and the choir from the McCoy Memorial Baptist Church in Los Angeles. This is from the film, from a rough cut, and the audio isn't fixed yet, but I'll let you guys hear it, and then I guess we can come back after the song and the show break, Al, and if anyone has questions, they can email me at richardrossilive@gmail.com or call the number. We'd love to have some of you call in. The number on the screen, 347-637-2379, any questions they have, too, as well as your, you may, of course, have more questions, Al. But, yeah, I did queue this up here. Hopefully this will work, and I'll be back with you after you hear it, and let me know what you think. Canaan Land from the upcoming film, Canaan Land, and this is just about 30 seconds of that. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a quick station break, and then we'll be right back with you.
Becomes weary. You find yourself on a journey to find a talk show, not just an ordinary talk show, but a Christian talk show, unlike anything the mind could fathom. Suddenly, your search comes to an end, for up ahead, there's a signpost, your next stop, the Rich Rossi Live Zone.
Well, you know, when it comes to talk shows, my friend Harvey's all ears, especially when it comes to listening to Rich Rossi Live.
I hope you could hear a little bit of that song there. I'm back, Al.
Right. Yep, yep. Sure could. We're talking a little bit about the spirituality as far as it relates to the film itself and other previous films. But I would like to talk a little bit about it on a little bit more of a broader and more personal scale. You're both a creative and an artistic person, as well as a Christian minister. So what would you say as a testimony to those, you know, who would call Christianity an American Taliban, who feel their lifestyles are threatened? Can you give them a reason for the hope that lies within you?
Yes. Yeah, well, this is a film about faith, and it's, as you said, an act of faith. We're making this film about faith on faith, and I've seen God provide so many miracles in our filmmaking by faith that are all so astounding that I almost hesitate to share how we can hope in God's provision. For instance, when I was making Sister Amy, there were times I had, you know, 30 cast and crew and went to the set down in Long Beach at the temple, the Four Square Temple there, and didn't even have food to feed everyone or film to shoot with. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's how bare bones we were. And I prayed for a miracle. And there was a casting truck where a woman literally stopped and said, I was doing craft services for a big film, and they canceled her shoot, and I'm a praying woman, and I felt to come to this church and bring the food in. And she fed our cats, and we've been friends ever since. And another guy had God speak to him to bring the digital tapes we needed to shoot. I mean, that's how much it was a loaves and fishes thing when we made our first film. The Christian Taliban thing, the scripture says agree with someone who's adversarial quickly where they're true. And, you know, there's a real truth to how toxic some religion can be. My wife and I did the AIDS walk a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles with our friend Danielle, who's a part of our Eternal Grace ministry. Her husband's a Disney animator, and her dad died from AIDS. He was bisexual, and he contracted AIDS and died. And we were walking with her and many others. And everybody was so nice and loving from all these different cultural backgrounds, and they brought us cold water as we were walking and food and, you know, little snacks, bananas, and granola bars and things. But the only nasty people were these fundamentalists that had signs with flames of hell and were screaming that we were all going to hell for doing the AIDS walk. And there was one gentleman, a vet, who they screamed at him, "You're going to hell and God hates you," and everything. And he was so traumatized, he grabbed my arm. I happened to be walking by him, and he said, "What do you think of what they're saying?" And I said, "That's a lie. That's a false gospel. God loves you, and God doesn't hate you. God is a loving God," you know, and comforted him at that moment. So there is an element. I don't say it's all evangelicals, of course. It's the fringe. But there is an element. In fact, when my wife and I ministered to AIDS patients in Long Beach, Fred Phelps, the notorious guy, you know, holds up the signs at veterans' funerals, "God hates fags," and everything. He was protesting me and screaming at me and traumatizing us and our children at the time, who were younger, and saying, you know, "Rossi's a fag lover," you know, and you know, there's so many people out there that are like that, you know, and I don't shrink back from agreeing with them on that that part of it, you know. I don't think it's all conservative Christians, of course, are not like that. But it's just sad to me. I thought, you know, Christ said in John 13:35, "By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, by your love one for another." And I thought everybody was loving at that AIDS walk we just went on. Thousands of people, they were all so loving. The only hateful people there were the people waving the Bible. So it's very sad, mm-hmm. you know. So I mm-hmm. sure hope I'm right and they're wrong, because I believe God is a God of compassion and not condemnation, and a God of love and not legalism. In fact, 2 Corinthians 3:6 mm-hmm. says, the letter of the law killeth, but the Spirit gives life. And so that is my hope, mm-hmm. that the Holy Spirit gives life, and we welcome him to bring his life and his gifts and to guide our film mm-hmm. and to guide our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, talking about the Christian fundamentalists who, you know, oftentimes, you know, upon hearing the word, you know, words grace or mercy, you know, immediately attack it as watering down or liberalizing the truth. Is it your objective to throw, just being a devil's advocate, is it your objective to throw out God's commandments, as people, you know, often accuse people with ministries as yours are accused of?
Well, that's a great question. I used to be one of those guys that would say that. When I was in my 20s, I was a fiery preacher. My wife and I met at a very mm-hmm. fundamentalist school. And I used to come mm-hmm. on my radio show and come against these preachers that would talk about grace and mercy and love and forgiveness too
right.
much. And
mm-hmm.
I had all these little slogans I came up with, like, you preach grace and slap Jesus in the face, you know, and mm-hmm. things like that. I would kind of mock the people that preached
right.
about self-love mm-hmm. and grace and things like that. But what I found was a bishop from the Orthodox Church and I were ministering to prisoners and men that had very serious offenses. Some were of a sexual nature that was addictive and compulsive mm-hmm. for them. And what we found over and over was these people that had a lot of sinful problems and behavioral problems of various sorts had come from a lot of shaming. You know,
mm-hmm.
and the bishop came up with a saying that I'll never forget. It was so great. And it was that shame and self-loathing perpetuates the sin and the addiction, but self-love mm-hmm. and spirituality perpetuates healing. And what we found is that as we let these guys know they could talk to us about any of their sins and that we wouldn't judge them and that there was forgiveness, the more they accepted God's love and loved themselves and came out of the self-loathing and the shame and indicting themselves, the more their behavior improved. And then I noticed in mm-hmm. the Bible, every time that the word grace is mentioned, there's a behavioral change. Like, for instance, everyone quotes Ephesians 2:8, for by grace you save through faith. It is not mm-hmm. not of works, so it is a gift of God, mm-hmm. And it's not earned, lest any man should boast. But the next verse says, and this grace has created us to do good works that we're prepared mm-hmm. for us to do. Or another example would be Titus, not to quote too many verses, but Titus talks about the grace of God has appeared to all men, and then the next verse says, causing us to deny greed and worldly covetousness and lusts and evil. And so what I found is that, you know, trying to focus on God's going to smite and smote you and hurt you and torture you if you sin actually causes so many problems and perpetuates the sin. You know, but it'd be like a woman, say, in an abusive relationship. If she's only is so afraid to walking on eggshells because she has an abusive boyfriend that will hurt her or beat her up or something if she does something wrong, that woman's gonna not have that healthy security. But if she knows she's loved by that man, she's gonna blossom and bloom in that relationship. You know, and
mm-hmm.
so I think the message of grace is the only thing that works. I tried legalism. I tried, you know, the law in my youthful ministerial days, and it just created a lot more problems. And, you know, the word wholeness and holiness come from the same root word. So the more we know we're whole, the more we heal, and the more we know we're loved mm-hmm. and accepted,
mm-hmm.
the more our lives get better, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and more healthy.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the objective is to heal the person, both themselves and their relationship to others and to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And that. All right. So, as far as getting back to the film, what kind of a release do you hope to have with the film Canaan Land?
You know, I am a little old school in that, I mean, I don't want to be too narrow-minded about how it has to happen. I'm totally open to whatever God wants to do with the film. But I did grow up, as you did, with that great era where you had kind of a screenings and events and the big screen. And a lot of people now, it's right away on the, you know, what people are watching on their phone or computer right away and streaming it right away. My preference would be to screen Canaan Land in all 50 states on a big screen and do as many live events as possible where myself and also hopefully others can join me in some of the cities would talk about the film, do a Q&A about the film, discuss the issues it raises, talk about why we're making this film, why this is important to know the difference between toxic faith that hurts versus healthy faith that heals, and why we made this film, why I really needed to process my own experience in the fundamentalist world and try to show others and help others from what I've been through. And, you know, I'd love to have that live event, that live connection for a while and do that first where people can go and see it at a theater. And, you know, at many of the locations, you know, almost like a rock and roll band touring, literally tour and be in person for a lot of them. That's what I want to do. That's my preference. I mean, there's always a backup plan. We can always throw it on Amazon and iTunes and all places like that, you know, at any point. Right. But I'd like to do that kind of screening it live in all 50 states first. We don't have a formal distributor yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I do have a relationship with Amazon, and there's a Christian Netflix place called PureFlix, and Amazon and PureFlix mm-hmm. have my prior features on there. So, I mean, there's places we can certainly have it, make it available to everybody. But I would like to, I don't know if it's the old preacher in me from my youth that likes to be in front of an audience and hear their questions and share from my heart, but I really would like to do some live events, you know. I don't know, what do you think about it? You've produced one of my favorite films about Ed Wood, and you've been in the film world. What do you think as far as release, Al?
Mm-hmm. Well, distribution, of course, is kind of a tough row to hoe, but it's I think it's important to believe in your project and, in you know, going forward. It's kind of an act of faith, you know, as you approach other people, they will, you know, catch some of that themselves, and they will see, you know, the value of it. So, you know, it's hard to come to a, you know, predetermined conclusion, but that's, you know, part of the process is that we kind of, you know, see through a glass darkly, and where it's a learning process, and you know every project, every film, you know we learn something new. So we just strive for the best, you know, for the particular project, and try to learn and try to reach as many people. And you know, I think that's where you know the success lies. It's the end goal, but it's also the process itself, the journey, you know,
yeah.
spiritual journey
yeah.
itself.
Now, with your film about Ed Wood, you had a screening with some of the Ed Wood gang all showed up, I remember. I think it was that in Santa Monica?
Right, the New Art Theater. And,
New Art, I love
yeah,
that.
That's
been a great theater for indie film. In fact, that's one of the theaters that made David Lynch's first film a success,
mm-hmm.
Eraserhead, as they started doing midnight screenings there of Eraserhead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
yeah,
you did a live
was,
event where some
yeah.
of the stars of the film and Ed Wood's company were
mm-hmm.
there.
Right, yeah. That was a really fun and exciting time. Kind of sad in retrospect because that was a lot of these people's last hurrah as far as the,
yeah.
you know, the Ed Wood stock company. Those of you our listeners that aren't familiar, but with Ed Wood, you know, that of course he was the basis of the film by Tim Burton starring Johnny
Depp.
Oh,
Alan, they're waving
and
at both of us
yeah.
here in the booth here that there's a caller
yeah.
coming in. Would you want to
okay.
say hi to the caller on line one
sure.
and welcome
okay.
them to the show, Al?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
There looks like their area code is 909, first three digits 573.
Right. Hello, welcome to the show. How are you
today?
How are
you doing?
Good.
I'm doing good.
Good. So, you have a question for Richard or comments?
Well,
or?
I was in several of the scenes in the movie, and I just wanted to basically reach out to Richard. I know he's doing this show today, and tell him what a wonderful time I had. The way he directs is phenomenal. It allowed me to kind of explore the character I was given to a great extent. So I just want to say, hey, I played one of the parishioners in the church scene.
And this is Phil. I recognize your voice, Phil, and you did a great job. We're editing the rough cut. My son saw you in the film, and he loved you. He said, Phil is really good in this.
Wow. That's good news.
So how did you meet Richard?
I met Rich. I was living in Long Beach, just down the street from a church, and I had this brochure. I was working at a pest control company, and I had a brochure of a beautiful church that was bird-proofed, and I moved down the street from this church, and to me it was like God talking to me, hey, you need to go check this church out, because it was like the poster child for the aspect of our service that had to do with bird-proofing. I went in and was welcomed right away. Really felt at home with Richard's message. He was preaching on David and the struggles David went through, and I really relayed at that time of my life. And it was an awesome experience.
So were you an actor previously, or is this something just recently?
Since grade school, I've been in productions throughout the years and movies and even when I went to school at the U of A Tucson, I helped shoot a movie. I did props, helped with lighting, and had the role of a hitman in a movie that also Danny Trejo was in. In a couple of scenes. So I've had some acting experience.
What was the title of that movie?
It was called Loco Vida.
Okay.
And I think that means crazy life in Spanish, right?
Yes. It was produced by Philip Hazard. There's another movie out there, Loco Vida, that's not Philip Hazard didn't do. It was a much larger budget. But the one I did was a Philip Hazard production.
That's cool. Well, you're great in it. There's a scene in which my character raises the dead. I raise a guy from the dead, and Phil is in that scene, and Phil has this great line in the film where he says, you might have thought you've seen miracles before, but this is a bona fide resuscitation.
I don't know where that came from. I'm glad I see. That's the thing. That's where getting back to Richard's directing technique, it allows creativity to flow. I don't know where that came from. It just based on how he set up the scene and how he allowed us to kind of explore our own characters, I was able to come up with stuff that I wouldn't normally come up with. So I really have respect for Richard's process and what he does.
You said you liked my directing style or process. How would you describe it, or what was it about it, Phil, that you like?
I think you place a lot of trust in the people in your cast, and you know they're there because you know that they can do what they can do, and you just allow them to do it, and you give enough direction up front to for that person to just, like I'm saying, be spontaneous and explore the depth of their own character without being micromanaged.
Yeah, yeah, I really believe in that. I, as an actor, I've been in a lot of things myself, and I've worked with directors that were very, very controlling versus gave you more loose, you know, more freedom to explore like that. And I really prefer the directors that trust you and give you room to explore and try different things.
There's an interesting parallel with the, you know, creative side with the what we're talking about spiritually, when you give a person, you know, a space to deal with or to handle something themselves, giving them, you know, direction at certain points, then that seems to have the best results.
Definitely.
Well,
definitely.
I'm so glad you're in the film, Phil, and that we've reconnected after a gap of time where we weren't in touch. It really was a godsend, and our family's so glad we're back in touch with you again.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go to the federal and see your son, but I had a chest regret.
Well, that's okay. I'm glad you're feeling better, and we'll see you soon. And if not before, we'll see you at the premiere of Canaan Land in Los Angeles, Phil.
Very good. Very good. Look forward to seeing you soon, Rich.
Thank you for
calling
in.
God bless you, Phil. Yes. What a blessing that Phil called in. That was great.
Mm-hmm. But in fact, you're obviously a person that you know, desires a strong connection with his friends and associates, but also general audiences as well. So, what would you like to hear from our listeners, either here or the general public, later on in regards to Canaan Land in terms of feedback?
Well, you know, I believe that art, music, film, when it's good, it makes you feel something emotionally, you know, in your soul.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you cry.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel something. I showed the first rough cut to some people that I've done, and they all cried. You know, they were all moved by it. They were moved because it was so nuanced, you know, in the characters that Rebecca Holden plays, Sister Sarah, and that I play Brother Billy. They saw the reason that they had the issues they had, and you feel for them. And my character's brokenness and why he's the way he is. So I really hope people feel something. You know, I hope they feel like, wow, you know, Richard Rossi and this company, this cast and crew, they really put something powerful and honest and truthful. This is one of the most truthful films about religion, the good and the bad faith and the good faith and the true and the false. And it was a very, very honest film. I'd like to hear people say, you know, hey, this is not this is a film about religion, but it's not some cheesy Christian film, you know, about a fake world where the Christians are all shimmering and shining perfect people that are about to be raptured, and you know, and then the people in the world are all evil and satanic. That this is a shows the humanity in all the characters, and that I'd like to see it really be a film that the way we wrote it, the way we acted it, the way we filmed it, grabs people. And I really wanted to grab both people in the secular and sacred circles, you know, as you asked about, you know, and I wanted to be a film that just doesn't die, that, you know, a lot of these blockbuster films, these hardware films that they spend hundreds of millions of dollars on, will go into a multiplex and it's forgotten, you know. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. The turnaround on these things will pop into the they'll just come and go. But I want this to be a film that people keep rediscovering and re-seeing, you know. I don't know. How about you, Al, as one of the producers?
Well, I think, you know, it's important, you know, in any aspect of life to keep all of your options open and just strive for the best. And whatever is, you know, has the best effect. You know, sometimes you can have a successful movie, but it, you know, make, you know, millions and billions of dollars, but it may not have that, you know, good of a, you know, impact on people, a negative impact, or just something that doesn't connect with them. But then you have other, well, like we were talking about cult films, you know, why are there cult films? Because there are things that certain films connect with people in a way that's hard to quantify, but there's an emotional value that they have. So, you know, you hope that you can have both that connection as well as the, you know, financial or, you know, just the reaching a lot of people, a lot of, you know, success. But that's something, we just have to work towards, like we're doing now. We're just putting the word out and trying to let as many people as possible know about it, what, you know, we're doing with it, and just keep, you know, moving along with it.
Yeah, I hope it does have that quality you mentioned about the cult films, where it's rediscovered and it's something that speaks not just to this generation we're in that we'll be screening it to, but generations to come. Because I think, you know, there's big questions in my work. I mean, I can act and direct in things that are about any subject, and I have.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very personal, you know, passionate film, and I really want to, you know, why do I want to make it? I want to really share my heart of what I've been through in the church world, and how you have to be very careful with religion. It can be something that heals you or hurts you, and I really...
Right.
You know, I really want to address the big questions, God, salvation, repentance. You know, we're here, the Bible says life's a vapor. It appears for a moment and vanishes away. And, you know, I was reading this morning in the Bible about, you know, in 1 Timothy 6, I think it was, where it says we come into this world naked with nothing and we leave with nothing, you know. And, I mean, to be a filmmaker and to not ask the big questions, to not deal with the big questions, I just can't make a fluffy Christian film. I really want to explore, you know, in a very gritty, hopefully edgy way.
Yeah.
And that's what I hear people say when they see the trailer and some of the footage. By the way, we do have a GoFundMe site. I think it's GoFundMe.com/Canaanland. I'll have to check that. Yeah, because if anyone's listening, I mean, even $5, here I am begging, but, you know, we need help. We need finishing funds. We have one day left of shooting, which is scheduled for this Sunday, and then we're hard at work editing and polishing this thing, and we want to do great sound correction, color correction. We want, you know, distribution and screenings and all kind of things. So if you go to GoFundMe.com/Canaanland, there's a picture at the top of Rebecca Holden, who plays Sister Sarah, and me as Brother Billy. And then there's a picture of Rebecca and I at the red carpet event, a red carpet event. And then there's a trailer. It's from the rough cut, so lower your expectations. It's not technically perfect, but there's a trailer on there they can watch at GoFundMe.com/Canaanland. There's a scene that we were referencing with Phil earlier where I'm raising the dead. There's the song we listened to earlier. There's me calling down gold dust. I mentioned that church that does the fake gold dust and feathers stunt, and that's where I got the idea for that. There's a song that Rebecca sings that will be in the end credits of the movie on there. That's I believe going to be nominated for best song at the Academy Awards, and we feel pretty confident about that. Rebecca's husband is one of the top Grammy nominated producers in the world, Joel Diamond, and this song already is on the lips of Academy people as, you know, best song in a film at the Academy Awards. So there's a lot of things. If they go to the GoFundMe.com/Canaanland, you just want to look at all the free stuff and not give me any money, that's fine. I won't pressure you. I will pressure you like Brother Billy, but I do humbly ask for help for, you know, even people that send $5, they don't realize what that does. Because what it does is it recirculates the GoFundMe and post an update that someone just gave, which kind of other people get the idea. It's like, you know, you ever notice in a room if someone yawns, everyone starts yawning, you know? And so if someone gives to this thing, it just kind of sends out all these online notifications. Someone just gave to this GoFundMe. Maybe you'd like to, you know. Because, I mean, I really am making this thing like pulling a rabbit out of a hat, you know. It is a film about faith, but we're really making it on faith as well.
It's amazing. It's amazing to me, you know, how far you've come with it. You know, I was always supportive of you with it, but just to see, you know, how far along it has come, and that, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, it will, you know, come together as you want it. But of course, you know, we have to keep working at it. But it just that you know, I just wanted to make that comment that, you know, I'm proud of you for, you know, having, you know, done what you have done so far with so many, you know, obstacles that you've overcome. So that's, it's just like the final stretch.
Yeah, it really is the final stretch. And, you know, the speaking of obstacles, Rebecca, our leading lady, her home was, you know, near all these fires in Calabasas. So we're keeping in touch with her. Hopefully she's going to be fine for shooting our last day here in a few days. But I tell you, we've had a lot to deal with out here. What's your feeling about the trailer you've seen so far, Al? Because I think you've seen the trailer and some of the footage.
Man, I'm very impressed. Just like, you know, tying in with what I said, you know, the I've seen several of them, and the, you know, the raising of the dead, and then the gold dust dance, and the, you know, they're just very interesting things. Hopefully, you know, listeners will check them out on the, you know, Facebook page, and just very, very interesting and exciting. Oh, another thing I wanted to mention, well, we haven't talked about it, is the celebrity cameos.
Oh, yeah.
Anything you'd like to say about that? Like, you know, at the end of one of the trailers, you have a list of them. But, anything you'd like to tell us?
Yeah, it's what's really interesting about the story is that, you know, Sister Sarah starts out in the story, and she has a very small ministry, you know, on YouTube, and a handful of people watching her sermons on YouTube. And Billy is very grandiose, and he builds this thing up to where he's preaching at the Hollywood Bowl. We got this great scene of me preaching at the Hollywood Bowl, the iconic Hollywood Bowl. And then they start reaching celebrities. Well, the way we did this was Rebecca and I both have a lot of celebrity friends and interview celebrities, me on my podcast and her, she's done it for different shows. And so we had in the can interviews with various wonderful, she interviewed Oscar winner Louis Gossett Jr. And I've interviewed Sally Kirkland, nominated for Best Actress in a lead role. And Cindy Williams I've interviewed from Laverne and Shirley, and Sally Kirkland I mentioned, Kathy Garver, Kathy Coleman, Ginger Alden, Elvis's last girlfriend who found Elvis when he passed. I know I'm forgetting
and
some. I better go on IMDb or I'll forget
Carter,
somebody.
Linda, I noticed Linda Carter was on the list. I wasn't.
Yeah, you know, Linda Carter,
Wonder
we were
Woman.
Filming down in Hollywood with the main characters, myself as some of the characters, myself as brother Billy and another character who I probably, let's just say there's a beautiful young blonde related to a twist in the story, but I can't say too much. Oh, Carolyn Grimes, I forgot her. She was in It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart is the little Zuzu that he gives the petal on the flowers. Donnelly, Heisene, Kathy Coleman. Rumor has it that Angelina Jolie may be in the film, but I'm just going to let's float that out there. I'm not going to confirm or deny that, but watch the film and you can look for her to see if that's true. But, yeah, Linda Carter was getting her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and there's a scene of my main character seeing her get the star and, you know, saying, hey, Wonder Woman, I love you, and her looking back at Billy and, you know, responding. But it's an actual live thing going on. She's really getting the star. And the whole thing of her getting the star is going to relate to a twist in the story, which I can't say too much about, or it'd be such a spoiler alert, you'd all be mad at me. But, yeah, it's really interesting, all these celebrity cameos and their twists in the plot around them that aren't just gratuitous because, you know, Billy and Sarah have a ministry to the stars. They call themselves the pastors to the stars in the film.
Yeah, it's quite a wide range. It's A Wonderful Life and Laverne and Shirley and Family Affair, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So very interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, I think that sort of wraps it up for this show, unless you have any closing comments.
I thank everyone for their support and you know, I hope that you understood my heart of why I'm making this film. You know, it comes out of a lot of personal journey and pain and experience in my life and trying to sift through the wheat and the tares of healthy faith, good faith versus bad faith. And this is a very archetypal story. I think it's a very timely story. The woman element is in there, too. My character's a womanizer, and there's kind of a Me Too movement in the film where the women that he's wronged start to band together to expose the con man. And so this film is timely on so many levels. The Me Too thing, also the in the news is these scandals of the predator priests and pastors that have molested people and things like that. So in the minds of people are religious leaders, and what are good religious leaders and what are bad religious leaders, good faith versus bad faith. All this is I think that this is a much more timely film than, you know, many of the big studio films that are coming out right now, actually.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Richard Rossi, and we wish you good box office success with Canaan Land and plenty of popcorn.
Okay. Thank you, Al. Thank you for interviewing me and hosting today. God bless you. And God bless all the listeners.
Okay. And our regular host, Richard Rossi will be back from his special assignment next time and bringing you the finest in popular culture interviews. And
thank you, Al,
for tuning in.
God bless you, Al. We'll
bye
see you at the premiere.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.